Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast that sucks up enemy podcasts and takes their powers. We've got a whole lot of video games to discuss this week, including Dragon's Dogma, Death Stranding, Divinity Original Sin 2, and the one you've all been waiting for, Kirby Planet Robobot. Then we talk about Trials of Osiris, coming back to Destiny, how the coronavirus might affect the video game industry, and some off-topic chat on shows and movies like RoboCop, Better Call Saul, McMillions, and a little bit of The Wire, which I know I still have to watch. All right, let's go. And we are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier, here once again with my lovely co-host, Maddie Myers.
Hello, it's me. I'm here.
And Kirk Hamilton.
Hello, it's also me. I'm also here.
Yay.
Maddie, how come your byes get so much attention, but not your hellos?
I don't know.
I think your hellos should get just as much attention as your byes.
I don't know. I say hello, and I also say bye. And, you know, people love it. People love the fact that I say bye. I don't know why, but I'm going to keep doing it, I guess.
It's a good trademark.
There's like a Beatles song about this or something, right? That we could like throw in here.
A Beatles song about doing something goodbye by accident and people unexpectedly enjoying it and then realizing that you have a vocal tick or tick in general that you didn't realize you had.
I think that's what that song is about, yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what that song says.
I think that song is called All You Need Is Love. Yes. All right. let's get to it. We have some video games to talk about, including a very special video game that we are probably the only podcast on Earth playing.
Very exclusive. Discussion of an important video game.
It's the hottest part of the video game conversation.
I will drop a tiny hint and say that I felt a little strange on the subway the other day playing 3DS because every time I see someone playing video games on the subway, it's always Switch. Like, that's the natural thing you play these days.
I see a Vita out in the wild every now and again.
Occasionally a Vita. Yeah, Vita's surprisingly popular. But the 3DS, you don't see a lot of 3DSs these days. But yeah, let's get to it. Let's talk about some other video games first, and then we'll unite to talk about the other big one. Kirk, why don't you go first?
Sure. So I have a tabletop game that I'll talk about in a second. First, though, a little bit more on Dragon's Dogma. Mm. I know I already monologued a lot about this last week, so I won't monologue anymore.
I've just spent the past week thinking to myself, what has Kirk been doing in Dragon's Dogma? I can't wait to hear about the pawns he's designed.
That dragonade
is hard. What outfits he put them in.
What is he going to do next?
What voices the pawns have? These are the things I remember about Dragon's Dogma.
My pawn voices are still weird. Every time I change them in, there's just always one that has a weird voice. So yeah, I don't know how much more I'm going to play this game. I'm kind of stopping. So I've been juggling this and Kirby, which we're all playing because thanks, Maddie. Though, man, what a...
You're welcome.
We'll get into it. But what a very nice game for you to make us all play after winning a bet. It's so lovely. But like, it's compared to, I don't know, like Bloodborne? When I made Jason play that. It's like a jillion hours long and hard.
I've been spending
a
lot of time thinking about Bloodborne while playing Kirby. We clearly want to talk about Kirby, but we can't yet.
Right,
back to you, Kirk.
Right. Anyways, like as games that you're making your podcast co-hosts play, that's like pretty gentle. So I appreciate that. So I've been going back and forth between the two. Dragon's Dogma is so odd and so close to being something that I really, really want to play a whole bunch of. And I've found myself kind of idly playing it, but it's just like not that exciting. Jason, I know that you're
on Switch, right? You're playing on Switch?
Yeah, I'm playing it on Switch. And it's a good port. It's cool. I know people love this game. And I get it. I actually kind of get why. But it's so kind of weird and flawed and broken in some ways that it just, like, I haven't fully been able to get into it. It's very opaque. I've described it a lot last week. The story is kind of a little bit elusive at first. The world feels kind of weird. It has that kind of Dark Souls energy that makes you be like, oh, is this going to be really cool? But the problem when it comes down to it is the balance is a little bit off. And the combat as a result isn't, I don't think, as fun as it could be. So this is a game that, like, you have to level up to get powerful enough to do damage. I switched to the Strider class, which is the kind of archer daggers class. And that class at level 5, when you like level your class up, you get a dodge roll. There's no dodge in this game unless you unlock the dodge roll. And that has made the game way more fun. So it's weird. It's like one class has a really good dodge roll that doesn't cost stamina, and you can just like motor around the battlefield like endlessly. Like all... It's faster than walking, so you can like just start rolling.
So you're basically Link, and you're just rolling around mode. Everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's like I feel like I'm a speedrunner, right? And you get a double jump too, so it's like you can double jump and do aerial attacks and roll. I'm like, oh, this is like really fun. Like the combat system is fun, but it's a little weird because you can find yourself totally overleveled or underleveled, and there's not a clear sense of who's leveled where, and it just feels like there are enemies that don't take any damage at all, which is weird. But the main thing that's getting me is the healing system, which is kind of interesting and maybe I thought would be something interesting to talk about, is like healing systems in games and how important the recovery system is for the game in general. So I thought maybe we could think through a few different healing systems and see if we can remember them. So Dark Souls is you have a thing that you replenish at bonfires, your Estus flask, and then you have to drink from it in combat. So that's like a huge system that has been copied by a lot of people because you're like in the moment, like you're fighting a boss and you have to get in the corner of the room and then you like drink the thing and you hope the boss doesn't crush you, but then a lot of bosses do.
Well, like that's an important part you didn't mention is that healing makes you vulnerable for the second that you're healing.
Oh, yeah, right. No, right. Like that's the Dark Souls way of doing it is like it takes you a minute because you're like walking slowly, like you can't. And if you dodge in the middle of drinking, don't you like lose the health item, but you don't get the health back? And I feel like Sekiro was played with that because it was the same kind of deal, but because enemies were so aggressive, there were bosses like Junichiro is that way. If you try to heal during the Junichiro fight, except like during some very specific times, you'll probably get punished for it because you're just never supposed to heal. Like you just kind of can't. And okay, so
well,
that's
you
like,
also it's not as important when you can resurrect yourself, so that adds another wrinkle to the whole healing system.
That's true, though. That's also kind of a risk, right? Because you only get to do it once. And like I'm thinking like Hollow Knight
has
Metroid does the same
Hollow
thing
Knight
as
is
Hollow
a really
Knight.
Cool heal.
You can just get as much stuff as you could ever dream of or as many energy tanks as you could ever dream of, and then it's like grinding. It's the same way you grind in Dark Souls, Kurt.
Well, no, in Hollow Knight,
you
have to heal.
You're talking about healing, right?
Specifically healing.
Well, so what's interesting about Hollow Knight is that the bosses are designed in a way to give you little breaks because they all have stun frames that you hit them enough times and they'll be stunned for a second, and it's meant to give you a chance to heal. Healing takes actually longer than it does in a Dark Souls or a Bloodborne
because you do the little focus
your energy
and then you heal. But remember, you can also equip that charm that I think is called like Steel Soul or something like that that heals you a lot faster, and that game is so precisely made that is actually a huge advantage because there's another charm you can equip that makes you invincible longer, like you flash your invincibility flashes a little longer after a hit, so you'll get hit, and if you immediately heal you can heal while you're invincible, which can be really useful. Like what are the knights that roll around on the ceiling and on the floor? They're like the Watcher Knights.
Yeah.
I remember during that fight, it was super useful. So that's like another one that's really interesting. God of War is one where like you don't have a lot of healing options in God of War. And like those little green like healing orbs will sometimes drop if you hit somebody and you have to stomp on them in combat, but it's actually sort of hard to do. So you're better off if you don't take hits, but you can equip a charm. I remember I had this charm. This is stuff that I really got familiar with during that final Valkyrie boss fight because it was so punishing and hard. So like I had a charm that would heal me, but I could only use it once every like minute and a half, which is kind of a long time. Doom, remember you could heal in Doom by like melee attacks. That was the whole thing. So it encourages
I just played an interesting system. I just played 3 hours of a Final Fantasy VII remake, and I think I'm embargoed until next week, so I can't really talk about it. But what they do is interesting. And actually, I can talk about this system based on what I played at E3 because that was a while ago. Sure. Basically, instead of, obviously it's an action RPG now, it's not turn-based combat anymore, but there's still like ATB gouge, just like there is is in those old games. And what happens is you hit someone, and your little gauge fills up. And you can fill it up twice, I believe. You get two different sections of it. And each section to use, like a spell or an ability or an item, it costs one of those sections, right? So in order to heal, you have to like not use a spell that for that particular gauge.
Right.
And then you can't actually play super conservatively, because if you don't have a gauge, you can only get it by hitting the enemy. So you have to run up and be aggressive and hit. Mm-hmm. It's almost Bloodborne-y in that way, because you have to go hit if you want to be able to heal. So just another interesting take on this.
Right.
But we should, to tie this into Dragon's Dogma.
Let me tie it back to Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah,
I wanted to list some of these, but I think we could go on, because these are all interesting, and all of them like encourage different styles of play. Like it was a cool thing to think about as I found this weird problem with Dragon's Dogma, which is in Dragon's Dogma, this is how you heal. You just have these, I mean, there's a few ways. There's healing spells, and for a while I was playing, like, I thought that was how it was supposed to be healed. Like, my pawn would cast a spell, and you have to like stand in a green mist while your health goes back up, and as you take damage, like the amount that you can heal goes down until you rest. So they've kind of like put a lot of thought into this healing system, where it's like, oh well, if you take a bunch of damage, you're not going to be able to adventure for very long, but you can just eat like this green plant, and then that just heals you and replenishes your health back to zero. So if you eat like five of them, it fills you back up. And you can just buy like 100 of them. And I have so much money because I've like done some of the story quests that like it costs almost nothing. So I just go into battle with like 50 healing things. And you can just pause the game at any moment. And you don't even have to, it's not an active thing in battle. You just are like boop, 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 boop. And your health is back up to full. And then you go back to playing. And you can also replenish your stamina that way. So you have stamina. One of the really cool things you do in this game, and this is very cool, when you're fighting a boss, is like you jump up on it and you climb on it like Shadow of the Colossus style. And you like are stabbing it in its weak point and like climbing all around on its arms, and it's trying to get you off. And it's really cool. Like, it's not a thing that I've really done in other games other than Shadow of the Colossus. And kind of Monster Hunter, when you mount a monster, like it has that feeling. But you run out of stamina when you're like holding onto the back of like a, you know, huge whatever, giant. But you can just like pause the game when your stamina's low and then just eat like four mushrooms, and then your stamina's just back. So I fought this boss.
Are they mushrooms?
It was this, like,
the mushrooms are stamina. The green
mushrooms are stamina.
Are,
the green stuff is health.
Yeah.
And I just carry, that's all I carry. Like, so I was like, okay, I'm going to get rid of all this random crafting shit that I have in my like impossible to navigate inventory. I'm just going to carry around these two things. And I just kill everything. Like, it's suddenly,
it's
just
it's
a matter of
patience. Right? Like, there's death is meaningless. Stamina's meaningless. You can just tap into a menu and heal at any time.
Right. So it's weird. Like, and the game has a lot of these kinds of holes, I'm sure. I just kind of discovered this through playing, but I'm sure there are other things like this too. But I like killed this huge Cyclops boss. I just got on its back, and then just I never ran out of stamina, and it couldn't get me off its back. So it was just like walking around, and I just slowly stabbed it to death. And it took like 5 minutes of me just like hammering the button and then pausing and like this is like not the most fun way to play the game. And obviously I could choose to play the other way, but I'm not feeling that motivated to do that. Like, when I can
just do difficult. This. It's very difficult in a game once you discover a way to exploit it to not do that.
Yeah, especially when it's like challenging and there are weird things where I'm just not sure if it's being challenging the right way. So it's a game that I could tell I would get more into. I've watched some stuff about like what happens down the road. The story gets pretty cool, actually. Like, it's got a bunch of great ideas, and it narratively builds in New Game Plus in a cool way. There are rumors that they're maybe working on either an online version of this game or a sequel, but I don't really know what the deal is there. But this does seem like a great first draft for a different type of hardcore Japanese action RPG in the vein of Monster Hunter, in the vein of Dark Souls, but with its own ideas, and that's exciting. I just don't know that I'm going to give another 30 hours to this one, only because there's other stuff I want to play. So I'm kind of putting
it down. You're going to switch to Nioh 2 pretty soon.
No, fuck that, man. No way. I don't know if I can play. I didn't even beat Nioh.
Really? You're not going to play? You love Nioh. I'm surprised.
I love Nioh, but I love Sekiro more. And
there's no Sekiro 2 coming out next month.
Yeah, sure. I'll probably play it. Is Nioh 2 coming out on PC at launch, or is it going to be later?
Just play the beginning. That's enough.
Yeah, right. I'll play a little bit. That's true. I'll probably play it. Anyway, so other things. I guess we're all going to talk about Kirby. And I've also just been back with my tabletop group playing that game Root that I've talked about a few times. And I just want to shout it out again. It's a fantastic game. My description of it, that each person plays a very different faction in this game. And so we've been playing it over and over and over again, but we trade off factions. And they're wildly different. I described them on an old episode. I won't do it again now. But as a result, it's fascinating. It's kind of like if StarCraft, if every game of StarCraft, you had to have one of each faction, and the factions were even more different than they already are, and the whole game was balanced around the idea of there being them and them like forming alliances. It kind of has that quality. They're so different that you can be playing and you can get a really good handle on your role. You know, like you're the cats and you like have to just be building bases and taking over the whole thing. And you're like, okay, I know what I need to do. I've finally figured out all my rules. But then there's like the Woodland Alliance is this other faction, and their rules are so different that you won't have any idea what the person you're competing against is even trying to accomplish. So it makes it, so it's like you have to play
all of
them.
Are you better at the game if you played all of them and you understand?
Yes. So we've been rotating and you have to play all the parts multiple times. And now we're finally to the point where everyone's pretty much played every role.
Which now the games are actually good at it. Yeah.
Right. And which is interesting because it used to be like I won a few games early on and it was always almost by accident because we just wouldn't realize until someone had run away with the game. But now we know, we're like, oh, that fucker, look what I know what he's trying to do because I've played that role. So it's much closer, which makes the game much more like tense, but also much more fun. So we're having a great time. That game is so good. There's all this expansion shit that we have that we haven't even messed with because like it's taking us forever to master the base game.
And this is Root, it's called,
Root,
right? Is
R-O-O-T.
This is this a one session game or is it like a continuous?
Yes. No, it's not a legacy game. It's a one session game.
Do you have to have four people, like one per faction to play?
You don't. I think you can play there's a few different versions. The cats, they're like one of the factions. These are animals fighting in the woods.
Yep.
The cats are
one
like...
One of them you said was like a rogue one. Which was that? A squirrel or something?
Yeah, no, the vagabond. It can be all the kinds vagabond. Of things. Oh, I was a possum. They added all these new ones. This possum like looks like the Joker and is this like, this awesome. That's the vagabond. The vagabond is just like playing their own game and they can ally with anybody. And then there's the birds, the cats, and the woodland alliance. And this game is so friggin' good. It'd be really cool, actually, if they could put out like a digital version of this game so people could play with other people. I've never played something this dense. Like the fact that the art is so charming and then the game itself is like the chewiest like freaking strategy game I've like ever played. It's so complicated, but it's so good. And I really recommend it. Anyone listening who likes tabletop games, it's a good game. And I'll talk about Kirby when you guys talk about Kirby. So that's
yeah, I'm still trying to get together a group for Pandemic Legacy, but now
you're gonna
have
so much fun.
Well, we're already going to play Pandemic Legacy in real life, so I don't know if I'll send you a board game on that.
No, we're not.
Maddie, what are you playing?
I'm still playing Death Stranding. I don't know if I'm going to make it, guys. This might be the last week I talk about this game.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Not shocked. I felt like after last week, after you talked about it last week, I felt like you were
sounded a little tired.
Make it through. Sounded like you were going to resort to going on YouTube and just watching all the Death Stranding cutscenes.
I will confess my crimes if I do that. I will admit to not having earned any of those 3-4 hour cutscenes if I watch them that way. So last night, I'll describe this in vague terms. This is about a mission I did, and it's not story spoilers.
Yeah, so there was a baby.
there was a baby, and I was carrying him around. And who knows what the deal is with this baby? That's a separate thing that's also happening, and you have to comfort it. So I had to hike over some mountains and get to a location that I had been to before. I could have hiked over the mountains, or I could have gone all the way the heck around, which would have taken way longer. And I was like, it's fine. I'm just going to hike over the mountains. How hard could it be? But I was stranded in an area...
Famous last words.
I was stranded in an area where I just wasn't that close to any places where you can rest and replenish your supplies. So I didn't have that many supplies in order to fight ghosts, BTs in this game. I just didn't. I have like a few of everything that I need, like a few blood bullets and a few grenades and so on. So I'm hiking along, I'm going along, I get to some BTs. It does not go well. The combat in this game is so slow and weird. Kirk, did you ever get far enough that you know about how the combat works in this game?
I got in some fights, and like the thing that I found that was weird was I would just mash the square button against dudes
to get out
and just
of
win
it.
Every fight. I would just win. I would just do it until I punched them. And I was
that
like, this
is
isn't
true.
Even hard.
So in fights against humans, which I think is what you're describing.
Yeah. That's what
you
I'm
are
about.
Weirdly powerful. Like that's my hot like tip about Death Stranding is that actually Sam Bridges is weirdly strong. And if you just want to punch a guy, like, it feels like you can't because you're carrying this huge freaking backpack of stuff. And so you're like, oh, I got to run away. I got to play stealthily. This is going to be like a Metal Gear game and it's a stealth game and I need to sneak around. You actually don't. You can just punch guys and they'll fall down.
It was related to Dragon's Dogma. It was a similar feeling. I was like, oh, like, stealth. I don't even have to sneak. Like, I was so scared of these guys getting me. And then they got me and I just wasted all of them, like, without even trying.
Which is kind of funny. And so I don't really mind fighting humans in this game because that's funny to me. But fighting the ghosts, I have just never gotten the hang of it. And, like, possibly I'm a dumbass.
This is like, you mean when the whale, like, the whale comes up and you're in the ocean place?
Or a squid, or like all kinds of things happen. All kinds of supernatural ghostly things can occur.
Fish.
And like, if you let a ghost touch you, then suddenly you're fighting like a shark or something. And like, you're in a different world and you have to fight a shark.
Just listening to this conversation.
It's really cool looking, I will say.
It is so cool.
It looks amazing.
Sounds good. I'm so glad that this game exists and is just allowed to be weird as shit.
And you know, there are parts where I'm evading like a shark or whatever in the mountains in like this weird dreamscape or something where I'm like, this looks really freaking cool. And I'm like barely finding a piece of lumber to position Sam on while I've got this like huge stack of things on my back. And I'm like firing my blood bullets at this shark that's like moving around in an uncanny way. And I'm like barely doing it. And there are also all these mechanics where other players can help you. And like, I was doing so badly in this fight. I don't know what triggers this, if it's just luck or not. Like, that part of it feels kind of magical and a cool way to me, where like another player just like appeared in the darkness and like popped out and like gave me some blood bags, which are like your health item that you use. And meanwhile, BB is like screaming, crying the entire time. And like, there's nothing I can do to console them because you can't console the baby
Welcome
during
to my
a fight.
Life.
And so there's just a baby crying throughout all of this entire fight. I'm like barely making it. I barely managed to defeat all these freaking sharks or whatever the heck they are, octopuses. And so then the fight is over. I've defeated them all barely. But the BB, this hasn't happened to me yet in the game. I've been very careful about consoling the baby. It gets this like sickness that happens if you don't console it enough.
Right.
Like, I was just like, F this. Like, I'm just gonna, I don't even know. Like, I just reloaded a previous save and I was like, I can probably do all of that again without making the baby sick. Probably. But I don't know. I don't know what happens if the baby gets sick. It was like red and I tried to console the baby and it was like, you can't do that now. The baby's just sick now.
Too late. you did not console your baby.
I'm glad that I'm like good enough at this game that I haven't yet experienced whatever happens when the baby goes into red mode and like you can't console it anymore. Like, this is my first time.
You get some angry
that.
Calls from your neighbors, I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah. And
I
don't know what happens,
sometimes
but I
you
just
can't console a baby.
It seems that way. So I just got mad and I reloaded the previous save all the way back to where I was. And then I kind of walked around a little bit. And I was like, do I want to do that again? Like, do I want to go over those mountains again and like go through that corridor that I know is going to have a bunch of ghosts in it? Or do I want to take a different route? And this is the game, really. Like, the game is not really the cool cutscenes that I like so much. The game is actually, you look at all of these exceedingly complex routes tactically, and you pack a backpack well, which I have clearly not been doing, and you, like, carry things around with you that arm you for your journey. And that is a strategy game, basically. It's like a hiking strategy game.
Survival strategy.
Whereas I have just been playing the game, like, flying by the seat of Sam's pants and just, like, kind of carrying some weapons, like, kind of winging it and just like barely scrambling my way through a lot of interactions. And like, I don't know. I think either I need to completely change the way that I'm playing the game from a mental perspective, or I need to move on with my life. And TBD, which of those two things I will do.
Yeah,
but
I have
one or the other.
Well, some advice. If you need to console a baby, usually they're either hungry or tired. Sometimes it's hard to tell which one.
Just give him a Monster Energy drink, I think. Just pour that directly into that little faucet that's at the top of his tank.
One joy I have learned of baby raising is the joy of the overtired baby, which is that, so sometimes you'll just be playing with your baby and they'll just seem perfectly happy for a while and you won't think that they need to nap, but it turns out actually they did need to nap, and then suddenly they'll be cranky for the rest of the day because they're overtired, and when they're overtired, it's very difficult for them to go to sleep. It takes a lot of assistance for them to go to sleep. So it's like You know how sometimes in a video game, there'll be like a bar moving. They're like a
red
part of a bar
button.
And a green bar. Yeah, and it's like swinging back and forth. And you have to hit it right in the middle, right in the mm-hmm. right place. Mm-hmm. You have to press the button right when the cursor lands in the green part of the bar. Mm-hmm. That is what it's like to have a baby and try to figure out when to put them down for a nap. It has to be, can't be too soon.
Right,
be too late. Either way, you're fucked. It has to be at the perfect time. All right. So I have been playing. So this week, I actually went to two massive preview events that took up the bulk of my time this week. One was Final Fantasy VII that I mentioned before, and the other one is Baldur's Gate 3. And I watched Sven Vinky, a friend of the podcast, play through 3 hours of Baldur's Gate 3, which is itself hilarious because how many video game CEOs actually play through their game on a preview demo? Like, that's how this guy is, like, so excited about his game that he is the one who, like, is actually standing there playing through it. Imagine, like, Bobby Kotick, like, playing the new Call of Duty at a video game preview event, just like 3 hours of blasting away. Anyway, so I think we're publishing this Thursday morning, so I won't get into super specific stuff because the embargo for this preview is Thursday afternoon, so you can go read my preview on Kotaku. It'll be up on Kotaku at 4 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. But, like, needless to say, I'll just say this much. It made me really, really want to go and play Divinity Original Sin 2 again, which is a game that I've always wanted to replay. It's phenomenal. It's probably my favorite RPG of, like, the past 5 years or so, 10 years or so. Definitely the best computer RPG of the decade. And so I had gotten it on Switch, and so I started a new playthrough on Switch, and I've just been jumping into it. Haven't played a ton, but still an incredible video game, I've got to say. So I was talking to our buddy Russ Freshtick at the preview event, and he mentioned that once you get pretty far into the game on Switch, the loading times get pretty out of control because it's loading so many different things, because the game remembers all the pieces you leave around the world and remembers all the states that everything's in. But at least for now, it's running really well on Switch. Just functions super well. Doesn't get a lot of lag or anything like that. Not a lot of like frame rate skips. And the controls are surprisingly intuitive. They take a little bit of getting used to because you have to remember. It's such a mouse and keyboard game that you have to remember, like, which button maps to which option, which inventory, which cursor, et cetera, et cetera. But surprisingly, runs like really well on Switch, and I am enjoying this.
It works on Switch, right? I've played some on Switch. So a thing worth mentioning is that the Switch has cross cloud saves with Steam.
Yes,
so that's the way that I treat it on Switch, because I am mm-hmm. at some point going to finish this game, only because I stopped because the definitive edition came out, and I was like right up to the part that they totally overhaul, but your saves don't carry over. So I was like, all right, I'll start over.
Yep.
And it's definitely a lot better on PC. Like, it's a lot better with a mouse and keyboard.
Oh, for sure.
And it looks so much better on PC.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fun thing to have, like, on subway rides and before
Absolutely.
Bed.
Absolutely. Well, and the fact that you can just take it with you and then put mm-hmm. your save back on the cloud, which works well. I save a lot when I play that game, just because, like, I don't exactly save scum, but I do quick save a lot.
So you've been going back and forth when you play, like, from Switch to PC? And
yeah, I'll generally play on PC, but then if I'm going to play it on the go. Well, so in a game I just, I'm excited to do this with is The Witcher 3, the other contender for best RPG
because
of the last
it's
decade.
It's important you play The Witcher 3 for a fourth time.
Third time. My new game
right,
plus.
Right, because it's
PC
The Witcher
play.
3, and that's how many times you
yeah,
have to play it's, it.
That's
yeah,
why
we
the
talked
three
about
is,
this.
That's what that means. The Witcher, right. Play it three times. I really like that game and wanted to play it. And I have a copy of it on Switch and on PC, but they just patched it so that the Switch version lets you copy your save over, though there's a bug. And I think they're looking into it. I asked them about this, and they're like, yeah, we're looking into it, because it's a thing that's affecting people. Where I think it depends on the internet that you're on. If anybody listening is having this problem, you can download your Switch saves, your Steam saves onto your Switch, no problem. But when I go to upload them, I just get like an error, which is really annoying. So I can't actually transfer progress back and forth. And I guess a lot of people have this problem, and people who fixed it have been like, I just went to a cafe and got on the internet there and it let me upload it. So it might be an issue with my internet. But anyways, that's another one that I love, this new trend of these huge PC RPGs somehow coming to Switch. Like, how the fuck does The Witcher 3, it looks good too. Like, how does it look good on Switch? How does that game run on Switch? But there it is, and it runs, and you can go back and forth and like play it on the go, but then also play it on PC, which is like my dream come true. Anyways.
Every game should be that way.
Yeah,
every
just
game.
Wait wait until we get the Switch Pro and you're playing like Cyberpunk on your Switch. It's going to be mind-blowing.
And then also playing it on PC and just switching back and forth. That is,
you know, what
dream
would also be cool? The dream app for the Switch would be like an NVIDIA streaming thing, or like the Steam, you know, Steam Link, where on your local Wi-Fi, you can stream from your PC onto your Switch, and your Switch is just a dumb device that plays the game. Mm-hmm, that would be so great. I don't know why.
That's like what I was doing with my laptop in Disco Elysium when I was like playing it in bed. If I could have done it with my Switch, that would have owned.
Oh, that would have been so good.
They need to do that with xCloud. They need to get Microsoft to just like run xCloud on them.
Yeah, and then they could all compete with each other, make the best service. Come on. Well, are they listening? Are they going to do this?
Imagine if you could get xCloud and then also Xbox Game Pass and then play those games on your Switch. That would be incredible, right?
Be very nice. I would love that.
Cool, yeah.
I guess I predicted that. Didn't I predict that? I predicted that for this year. I hope that comes true, because then everyone will play Half-Life 2 and we'll talk about it.
That'll be great.
I have a question for you guys. Speaking of predictions, and then I'll get back to Divinity. But one of my predictions was that two publishers would pull out of E3. First of all, I might win that just by default because everyone might pull out of E3 because of the virus.
Like, you probably got that one.
Fine.
Well, no. Well, nobody's pulled out of E3 yet except for Sony. But the question I was going to ask is, actually, Jeff Keighley pulled out of E3. Does he count as a game publisher?
No.
No.
Jeff Keighley doesn't publish games.
I'll get back to you on this.
What do you mean? That's not even a hard question.
I want
to
make a case for this. Well, okay. We'll discuss.
I'm looking forward to that.
Anyway, Keighley Enterprises.
To get back to Divinity for a second.
Yeah.
Something that I have always loved about Divinity Original Sin 2, and in fact, even compared to like The Witcher, which is a game that's fantastic, obviously. The Witcher 3, there's a lot of combat that is just like ho-hum, like you're going through the motions, same routine over and over again, not really thinking about it, just like, okay, going to swing my silver sword a bunch of times, cast that shield buff thing, whatever. It's not super interesting. Divinity Original Sin 2 treats every single combat encounter like it's like a giant strategy RPG, and you have to just be making interesting decisions constantly. And even you can get to a point where you can kind of manipulate it and just like use Chicken Claw all the time or some of the other superpowered abilities. But for most of the game, it's just so smart about like making every single combat decision feel like it matters and not putting in any sort of like filler combat.
There's no enemies that are like that come back, that respawn. Every enemy exists.
Nothing comes back. Yeah.
One instance,
every single battle in the game is just like a battle that matters in some way. And that's not to say that they're all like important. Like sometimes it'll just be like, oh, here are two bears. But you kill those two bears and that's it. That like they're not going to keep spawning.
The leveling curve is very strictly controlled in that game as well. Like you, one level above where you're at.
Yeah,
you're
one level makes a huge difference. And yeah, it's just such a smart game in so many ways.
Yeah,
and
it's really
I
well
will
made.
Talk about more about Baldur's Gate 3 because I'm very excited after what I saw. I'll say that much. I feel like it was a natural combination, like that the people who made my favorite RPG of this decade are making a successor to my favorite RPG of the previous decade. But
yeah, I mean, anything
I'm very
Larian
excited
wants
about
to do
the
is
they did
cool with me.
Is yeah. Down for that. Yeah, I'm very excited. Y'all will see when my preview goes live on Kotaku for Baldur's Gate 3. But yeah, Divinity Original Sin 2. If you haven't played that, folks, get on it. All right, why don't we take a break and then we can talk about Kirby in segment 2 because we've already talked for a while about games. All right, let's take a break.
Hello, I'm Melissa Kirsch.
And I'm Alice Bradley.
And we're the hosts of Lifehackers podcast, The Upgrade. The Upgrade is a show about all of the ways you can improve your life.
That means how to be happier and healthier and more successful and more productive and just generally better in every way.
We talk about stuff like sex.
Very few people are like, please jackhammer me for another 45 minutes.
Psychedelics.
You don't just go on the diving board when you're 5 years old and jump in the deep end, because that would be traumatic.
And psychopaths.
Giving you exactly what you need or want without maybe you being aware that you want it.
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Abu, and I want to tell you about a great new show, the Gaming Ride Home Podcast. It's a video game news show. All the headlines, rumors, reviews, hardware leaks, release date confirmations, and more delivered to you every day at 5 p.m., just in time for that commute home. The show is hosted by former Game Informer and IGN writer Kyle Hilliard, and it's only about 15 to 20 minutes long, the perfect length. Kyle is online all day, every day, reading those tweets, catching up on those rumors and consolidating the chatter in the world of gaming so that he can catch you up on everything that's happened while you were busy living your life. This is the latest show from the Ride Home Podcast Network. So search your podcast app right now and subscribe to Gaming Ride Home.
And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, why don't we talk about Kirby? So a little bit of background here for people who aren't familiar. Kirby Planet Robobot is a 3DS game by Nintendo. The three of us are all playing it because Maddie won our annual predictions bet for 2019, and she got the most predictions right. I think Kirk and I both got zero.
Zero.
Yeah, we tied for second. Let's put it that
way. Yes, we tied for second.
Kirk has a debatable half point. But
right. Okay. That's right.
We decided a while ago no half points, so it doesn't count.
Well, then he gets a zero.
And so we are all playing Kirby Planet Robobot. I don't know how far you guys are, so, but I can give my initial impressions.
I've beaten it all before.
Right.
And the first time I played it when it came out. Mm-hmm. Loved it and got all the code cubes. I never collected all the stickers, nor did I ever expect you two to do that. But I believe I at least recommended getting all the code cubes because
the code cubes are fun. There's some fun little puzzles to go and find. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so I wanted to give some initial impressions and then I'll throw it to you guys for thoughts.
Sure. I'm in like area four now. I'm somewhere in the middle.
You're farther than me. I just thought, Jason, when you said a little background, that you were going to say Kirby is the round pink life form from Planet Popstar who possesses infinite power and can inhale enemies to copy their abilities.
Infinite,
but instead, you gave podcast background.
Power.
But I feel like that is
what's the planet name?
We can
the planet Popstar.
Popstar. Yeah, Popstar? That's where Kirby's from.
Kirby is from the movie starring Adam Sandberg.
Yeah, he's from Popstar. Never stopping.
I can tell you haven't paused the game, Jason, because if you pause the game, it will tell you this important information about Kirby that Kirk just read to you, and it'll help you out.
I found that information very helpful anyways. So now we all know.
I lost some progress annoyingly because I was playing on the subway and then my battery died. I was like, God damn it. So some initial impressions. I think it's adorable. I really like all the little secrets you can find, and I really like what they're doing with a lot of 3D foregrounds and backgrounds. It's clearly meant for the 3DS. And it's fun to play through. It's just an enjoyable, pleasant, it's a very pleasant game. It's a very joyful game. But the reason that Kirby, there are two reasons that Kirby has never really stuck with me, even though Kirby is my Smash main. But the Kirby games have not really stuck with me for two reasons. One is that they're super easy, and that is still the case with Planet Robobot. Mm-hmm. Two is that the actual mechanics of floating around and controlling Kirby and just sucking things up and spinning him out and doing his little dash stuff are just not as enjoyable, not as satisfying for me as other platformers, like a Hollow Knight or a Mario Odyssey. Mario Odyssey is the type of game where I can just play it just for the sheer joy of controlling Mario and throwing the hat and jumping around. And there's nothing really like that for me in Kirby, unfortunately.
What about getting into the mechs? Do you think that's fun in this game?
The mechs, yes. The mech is quite fun. I really enjoy the mech.
Good news, that will continue and increase.
Great. No, I like the mech a lot, but...
Can we describe the opening mech sequence to the listeners? There's this fucking amazing sequence in this game where you're playing this little floaty pink creature, and then you get in the fucking mech, and it's this huge mech suit, and it's Kirby gets in it, and there's this basically a super anime princess transformation video plays where the mech becomes magically the same pink as Kirby, and then this awesome ass music starts playing, and then you just destroy your way through the rest of the level just punching giant things that were blocking your way before, and it's really good, and that's all I wanted to say.
It's really good. And also you can copy abilities as the mech, and then it has all these different looks for the mech that are satisfying in their own ways.
Oh, so good. The one with the propeller blades. I just got that one where you fly with the blades. Very good.
The rock one where you have these two rock fists. I don't know if you're far enough.
I don't know if I've gotten that yet.
It's pretty great.
Nice.
And just the action of, I don't know, this game feels very tactile to me. I totally get how somebody wouldn't like a Kirby game, but the things about this particular Kirby game that I like are just the way that it feels and the way that it controls. Because I like controlling Kirby, but I also like the way the mechs feel. So, there are all these moments where you have to unscrew a screw. The game is super into letting you unscrew screws.
Oh,
and
it's really good.
It just feels awesome.
Because you like, do it with the circle pad.
You do it with the little circle pad, yeah. And so you're just like, you're in a huge mech, you have a huge equivalent of a screwdriver, and you're just screwing things around and then moving shit. I don't know. It feels awesome. And it's just a really pleasant game. It's so pleasant to me.
Yeah, because I agree that it is a really good feeling game, I think. I get what you're saying, Jason, about the basic movement, which is a little weird for me, partly because I don't know if there's a way to switch the buttons, but just jumping with the far right of the diamond is a little weird for me. I'm used to jumping with the bottom of the diamond, you know, on the face buttons. So like that just...
I bet you can change that.
I feel like haven't really looked. I paused it to try to get to the options menu, and then instead that thing I was reading popped up where it just tells you Kirby's backstory, and I was like, oh, okay, well.
And you were like, oh, I guess that's all the that's options useful. In this game.
Well, so this is my first Kirby game. I have one of them on Switch. Yeah, I've never really played Kirby.
You never played the Game Boy one or anything?
No, not really.
No, I guess you didn't have one.
I had a Game Boy.
I think that was the first game I ever beat as a child. I might be wrong. I may have beaten a Mario game before that. But Kirby's Dream Land, beating Kirby's Dream Land, I was very satisfied by that. And really was like, yeah, this game's easy, but I beat it.
It's cool to play this, where this is, you know, basically the first one that I've played, and to like fit Kirby's powers and ability into the pantheon of Nintendo characters. Because Kirby does possess infinite power. Is Kirby the most powerful Nintendo?
Because he can't die. I mean, this is why the games are so easy. Like, nothing bad ever really happens to you in a Kirby game, and much like Dragon's Dogma, death is kind of meaningless.
You eat some
cake. You're collecting stars, sort of Mario style. Like, you're getting one-ups, whatever. But there's always so much of everything that's not really the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to solve the puzzles and collect everything.
Which is definitely where the challenge comes in. There are some where I've been like, I just don't know what I'm supposed to do here, and I just haven't solved them. And I'm like, I guess I'll come back. But I like that, because the ones that I take the time to solve are clever. And Kirby can fly. That's the main thing, is like the fact that you can puff up air and then fly. I'm like, oh, well, no other Nintendo platforming
he's
character
basically
can
the
do
Superman
that.
Of Nintendo characters. Yeah. Like, you have to really be creative to come up with enemies for Kirby.
Like Mario with the cape, or one of the really good Mario power-ups, but permanently. Like, and also can eat anybody and just spit them out as a star, which is also...
It's like Mario and Yoshi combined.
This game, so a couple things that I like about this game. Yeah, you mentioned this unscrewing. So I haven't played anything on 3DS in a long time. And I love the circle pad. I'd forgotten how great the circle pad is. And like that, I remember when I was at Kotaku, I reviewed that what's it called? The add-on thing that's like the weird, like it clips onto the right side of the 3DS and gives you a second circle pad.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And so you can play, like, I was playing, I think.
Well, that was before, that was, yeah.
Yes, before the nub, before the eraser.
Before the nub, before the new 3DS.
Yeah, I hate the eraser nub. Like, I hate
it's
that thing.
It's not good.
Second circle pad was way better. Like, playing Resident Evil Revelations with, like, real aim was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So
I played that game without that, and it was terrible.
Yeah, it was not
I should
as
have
good.
Gotten this device not that you reviewed at Kotaku.com.
I don't know if it only worked with a few games. It was cool. It turned your 3DS into like an abomination. Like, it just made your 3DS look horrible. But yeah, so I like that there's like a boss that you're fighting early on where he slams his hand down and there's a screw on it, and you jump on the screw and you like unscrew his hand and it falls
apart.
And
then it unscrews his whole hand.
It's
exactly.
good, and his arm is falling off. All of that. Mm-hmm. It uses the 3D really smartly. Mm-hmm. Both like aesthetically and for the puzzles. So there's a whole thing where you're jumping to the back of the screen and the front of the screen, and there's a whole mechanic where like there's two planes of 2D happening. And I really like this idea of like you're manipulating stuff in the background, and then you jump on a star and fly into the background. And I can already tell there are some puzzles that I haven't solved that are like harder puzzles that involve sort of having to think of those two planes against one another, which is really cool, and then just really cool looking. Or like when you get hit by a car. Have you been hit by a car in this game? And it like blasts you up, and Kirby like smacks into the screen in 3D and then falls down, and it's hilarious. Like, all there's so much of this like playful,
it's very Looney Tunes
esque,
and
Smash
also
Brothers
like
thing.
If you get knocked over by like a rock or something that comes at you, Kirby will like flatten out into a pancake and will like ever so slowly glide towards the floor as though he is Bugs Bunny and like has been flattened by an anvil or something. It's great. I mean it's a children's game, and so I mean there is a plot in this game, which I guess we could say
what the robots have invaded
doesn't
the planet.
Actually matter. The robots have invaded the planet. Eventually there's like sort of a robot boss lady who talks to you, and there's like actual text you can read, but it doesn't actually matter.
Like,
basically every single every
is it like
single...
the architect in, I'm picturing the like Kirby in the room with the architect from the Matrix Reloaded, and there, it's
yeah
like...
there's a bunch of screens with like every permutation of Kirby's abilities.
Yes, like flipping off the screen and stuff.
Yes.
This has happened from
it's
before.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. And then Kirby just inhales the architect and swallows him. Yeah. And then Kirby becomes the one.
Right,
and
right.
He is the master of everything right, after right. that. The game gets really crazy. But up before
looking
that.
Looking forward to that.
Every single enemy that you fight in this game is a robot. So, right. like, you know, you're doing a normal water level or whatever, but there's like a shark that's a robot shark. And there's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. That level's really cool. I think that's the one I just played with all the robot sharks. And I think I'm further than you guys. And I was just
I'm
like,
in
man,
the city. So that's like
it's
the second
cool
world.
That there's a robot shark. I just enjoy it. I recommend this game. I truly don't know why anyone would dig out their 3DS again. I'm enjoying that I made you guys do it, and I'm glad that you're at least having some fun with
it. I'm glad to have my 3DS out again. Like, it's just a reminder that there's a bunch of good games on this thing, and that'll always be true. Like, they're not going anywhere. There'll be good. Those games will be good in, you know, 10 years. They'll still be good. Hopefully my 3DS will still work.
And this game is still good. This game is old, but I also feel like if you're a person who doesn't like Kirby that much, this is a good one. Like, Jason, I think you'll enjoy it more as it goes along because there's a lot more mech stuff and a lot more puzzles. And that's part of why I was like, I feel like if you're not a Kirby person and you play a Kirby game, mm-hmm. Planet Robobot is the game I would recommend. You're not spending as much time as Kirby as you ordinarily would be. You're mm-hmm. spending a lot of time as Kirby in a mech suit, and you're spending a lot of time solving puzzles and like using your brain to like think about the space you're in, which I find super fun in this type of game.
I remember editing Steven Totillo's review of this game and talking with him and being like, yeah, I've never played a Kirby game, and Steven loves Kirby games, and he said the same thing. He was basically
we're very
said,
similar
this would
tastes,
be a really
yes.
good one. And I was like, it sounds rad, like the stuff you're describing, and playing it really is very, very cool. It's just mm-hmm. it's very nice that you didn't pick something super difficult, or that like this just goes down so easy. It's
you guys
so,
don't I just, have to memorize all the bosses' attack patterns,
right? I can
or
just
whatever.
Kick back on the couch and like play this really lovely game. It's I'm really into it.
It is relaxing.
So yeah, thanks, Maddie.
You're welcome.
We'll talk about it more. We'll talk about it more as
yeah,
we,
I'll probably
we
finish by
play
next
through
week,
the whole guess. Game.
Yeah, it's
we
not
could
that
try
long.
To finish. So let's talk about a couple more things. First of all, I think we pretty much have to talk about the coronavirus because that is the biggest story in the world right now. And even though obviously it's very serious, killing people. Causing a lot of panic, destroying the economy, et cetera, et cetera. We, of course, have to approach this from the video game angle.
I was wondering how that sounds.
At least
if
we're
going to
approach it, we might as well approach that angle.
Right. We might as well talk about the gaming angle. And actually, it's having a pretty serious effect on the video game industry. And some of this stuff has been talked about. And I'm actually also going to bring up one point that nobody's talked about and get us... We'll see if our little split-screen scoop gets some attention this time around. That gets some reset era threads. But anyway, let's start from the beginning, right? So this virus, I mean, everybody knows what the coronavirus is at this point. It is spreading and spreading. It's gotten to the point where companies are pulling out of incoming events. So PAX East is this weekend. A bunch of companies pulled out of that. GDC is in a few weeks, and some companies have pulled out of that as well. Sony, Facebook, EA just said that they were telling all their employees not to go and canceling all international travel. Hideo Kojima canceled. He was going to do a big panel there. I've gotten some emails from people who I was supposed to meet with at GDC just being like, hey, I'm pulling out. Who Same. Knows if we'll wind up going because, I don't know, things are still up in the air. We're not sure yet. We were going to go and do Kotaku split screen interviews and stuff, but at this point, who knows if it's a good idea. So obviously, in that sense, it's having a big effect on everything. If this is not contained, and I can't imagine how it would be contained, I can totally see it like leading to E3 just not happening, or E3 happening in a very small scale this year, because it'll be tougher and tougher to travel.
Like, things were trending that way before there was a possible yeah. pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
E3 yes, was yes. already having a time.
Yep. So, okay, so that's all one thing. And by the way, I think that might also, the cascading effects of this might also be like, if Sony was planning a PS5 event, like, maybe they have to cancel that and do a reveal in another way, or postpone it, or something like that.
There's also the manufacturing aspect of
yeah,
this,
well,
right?
So I was going to get to that. Okay, so all of that, none of that stuff really matters to your average video game player. What does matter to your average video game player is that a lot of the consoles are manufactured in China, and there are factories where people cannot go to work because mm-hmm. they are quarantined or told or recommended not to go to work. So that is going to have a huge impact. It has already had a huge impact on some pieces of hardware like the Switch. And of course, we are entering a new generation of consoles. And I think based on what I've heard, based on the conversations I've had, there is a very, very strong chance that if this continues, like, next gen is going to be super affected. Like, maybe the console releases get delayed. Maybe they are very limited supply, more limited than usual. I don't know. But let's extrapolate this further. And this is the point that I haven't seen a lot of people making. And this is some interesting food for thought. A lot of video game companies these days, if you look through the credits of any video game company, you will see probably a dozen companies that are not that video game company. Mm-hmm. They're outsourcing houses. Mm-hmm. Virtuos is one of the biggest ones, but there are tons more with names that a lot of people haven't heard of. A lot of those outsourcing companies are in China. A lot of those outsourcing companies in China are right now working on AAA games for this year and beyond. So imagine, say, you're working on the new Call of Duty and your plan was to have an outsourcing company in China do like five multiplayer maps and like zombies and whatever else. Or like, say you're working on The Last of Us 2 and mm-hmm. your plan was to get all these art assets from a Chinese outsourcing house and they can't go to work. What do you do? Maybe you delay your game, or maybe, and I think this is what's most likely going to happen, you ship your game in a totally different state than you would otherwise. It has less maps, it has less stuff, less art, less assets. Another option is you just crunch your people even further to make more stuff, but people are doing that anyway, so I can't imagine that'll change much. But I do think there is a very real possibility that because of coronavirus, this year's slate of games just looks different than they would otherwise. Has different stuff, has less stuff. And I think that's something that people haven't really given a lot of thought to, but it's kind of weird to think about.
But it's also like kind of strange to think about it because it's like the least of everyone's concerns. I just feel like we should say that. I know we all know that, but
right.
It's just worth reiterating that like this is pretty far down on the list of the top 100 concerns.
But we're talking about our beat.
Sure.
We're talking about our beat.
Of course.
We're talking about
I know we said that. I just felt like we should say it again.
Right.
We're not here to talk about the economic effects or the deaths.
But what if Cyberpunk is kind of bad? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The world of video game development, like the way that video game development has become so global, is fascinating.
Yeah.
There's a really good outline article. Did you guys read this? Mike Thompson's outline article a while ago that's about Virtuos. It's this huge, really well-reported piece about that. And it really it opened my eyes, even though I'd watched the credits to whatever Naughty Dog game and just seen like a billion Chinese names in the credits of all these people at all these other studios who sometimes like make huge parts of these games. It's a mm-hmm. really good article about that. And then this is just one way that you know, interconnected global structure of creating things can have effects on just the end user, like the process of buying them in ways that you wouldn't think. You're like, oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
If something happens somewhere else in the world, it can really dramatically affect something that's, you know, quote, being made here by a studio in America, but is really being made by people all over the world.
Yes, 100%. Outsourcing is something that I've been researching a lot for my new book. And yeah, it's pretty fascinating the way that it works.
It's a good article. We should link that in show notes, that Mike Thompson piece. It's good.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting piece. I think he went to Virtuals and talked to some of the people who work there and got that perspective. It's become so elaborate that like you think of outsourcing these days as like, oh, we'll send a list of like boxes and crates and computers and like get all those assets from the outsourcing people. But no, it's not. It's a lot more elaborate these days the point where they'll be making entire levels and maps and sections of games and you don't even think about
that.
And
to the point where it's like, I'm guessing, really built into the pre-production process. Like you plan, okay, we're going to have all these people. And then suddenly if you don't, I can only imagine what a huge, you know, catastrophe that could be for the development of
the game. Yeah, and I feel for those workers. I don't know if people like who aren't going to work or are also not getting paid, but that's like really horrifying to imagine.
My main question about all of mm-hmm. this is how is that affecting all of the workers who aren't sick, may not be in danger, but just want to be able to work and can't? And how much
really
of
sad.
That? I mean, there's also not a ton of information yet about like how serious it is, and it obviously impacts different people differently too, but it is a flu mm-hmm. strain. And so for some people, it's just going to be the flu, just a regular mm-hmm. flu for them, and they'll be fine. And so I mean, I'm sure everyone has seen a whole lot of very different types of reactions online to the way that this virus is getting reported and described. And I'm sure there are workers out there who are like, I just want to finish making my game, or like finish making this hardware, and like, this is ridiculous and we shouldn't have to do this. But then there's also the question of like, is it ethical for us to be like continuing as though everything's completely fine when it's at least mildly not fine, or possibly extremely not fine?
What is the point come where we have to like...
Well, that's, that's the question of like, do we, is it ethical for Kotaku to go to GDC? I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
I don't think there is an answer to that, but it's certainly something we have to talk about and have been talking about, is like, should we do this? Should we go there? Or should we pull out? And I think for the big corporations, it's almost an easier decision, because even though I'm sure a lot of them have to lose a lot of money, like eat a lot of costs for this sort of thing, it's the legal liabilities would cost them even more if someone were to get coronavirus, especially like Facebook. They have Oculus, obviously, and you're just putting this thing on your head all day and your face all day, like slobbering all over
it. Right, Facebook is one of
right. So for them, it's an obvious yes, because imagine if someone got coronavirus and they happened to have put an Oculus Rift that day.
They're
like,
also
the legal liability is out of control.
I was just on the Oculus subreddit for, I don't remember why, for reasons, and people were talking about how hard it is right now to find a Quest or whatever the model, the most recent plug-in one is, and they're, and the understanding is that that's due to manufacturing slowdown too. So,
Well, sometimes when I need to find a Quest, I just look for the yellow exclamation point above somebody's head.
That's usually a good idea.
Oh, yeah, that is a good way.
All right, let's talk about one more thing. I'm sure coronavirus will keep coming up over time, but let's talk about one more thing before we get to off topic. And that is Trials of Osiris, which is the Destiny PvP mode that Kirk and I have a long history with, is coming back on March 13th. And I guess that leads to the question.
The big question.
Should we come back to Destiny for this?
Start playing Destiny again? That's the question on my mind.
Maddie, you're pretty competitive. I think you would like Trials. It's the most competitive shit I've ever done in a game, that's for sure.
It is pretty intense. So for me, it's an easy answer just because I have to be taking care of a baby all the time. So it's harder for me to be like, all right, sorry.
Excuses,
wife.
Jason. Those sound like the words of a noob who needs to get good.
It's true. It's true. There's winners and there's losers.
Kirk, do you feel the pull?
No.
We haven't had Trials in so many years.
No, because Trials was like, I still remember this text message exchange. I think it was like in my review of House of Wolves, which was what added Trials. It was between you and me. And it was at the end of a day that we had spent. The common thing that would happen, and this is when you and I played this game, I'll just tell this story to anyone who wasn't listening to the show then, is that you and I became very fixated on completing Trials of Osiris. And to explain this to anybody very briefly, it's like an elimination tournament where you have a card and you can get 2 losses on your card before you have to cash it out and start over from the beginning.
If
you get 9 wins, you get better loot the more wins you get without getting 3 losses. And if you can get 9 wins without getting any losses, you get to go to the lighthouse, which is like the coolest shit ever. You're king shit of Turd Mountain. You get a rad special gun that, like, if you shoot someone with it in Crucible, then they know forever that you're the Lord. So that was like the thing. And we got really into it because we had never gotten into Crucible and Destiny, but we did. And so we would play for like hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And that's the reason I think I can't get back to it, because of course the fixation is immediately on going flawless and getting to the lighthouse. It's not like, oh, I just want to play
some
Trials.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Right,
yeah,
exactly. So that turns it into this extremely high stress competitive thing where like a single loss can fuck you and you have to start all over. And so like all your whole afternoon winds up being on the line toward the end of the day where it's like, well, we spent like 5 hours doing this. If we fuck this up now. Yeah, sunk cost really gets to you. And I just remember this text, it's something like, you're like, I was like, Jason, I feel like I've been like gambling and doing cocaine all afternoon. And I don't even have experience with cocaine. This is just me imagining
just high on the adrenaline and dopamine of a video game.
Well, I'm feeling like totally hollowed out in that way. That just like
basically like you're in Uncut Gems.
Yeah, that's what I
was
thinking.
Yes, it has that feeling of just like it's like gambling. Like it's very addictive, and you feel like you've been indulging in addiction, and you've been really high on this high energy thing. But then at the end of it, you're like, what did I even just do? Like I felt so great in the moment when I was like chasing that guy around the map, and now I just feel empty. And it was.
But the flip side of this is that unlike those other things, the high that you're chasing, like you're chasing the dragon is the expression people use for heroin,
yeah, yeah.
But you could actually get the dragon, and when you get there, it's like unlike anything else. Like, remember,
right,
when
it's a real life dragon, and it shows up in your apartment.
So you get to the lighthouse, and then maybe you get the messenger, or maybe you get like the third one of the hand cannon that you don't want.
For me, that didn't matter as much as the feeling of like, holy shit, we actually did this. Yes, like, because we did it. We got our buddy Todd, who we met through, I think it was NeoGAF, the Destiny thread on NeoGAF.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Todd. Todd's the best.
Yeah, shout out to Todd. We played together, and after grinding, he was much better than Kirk and I. Kirk and I are we're decent.
We
on the same
our game
level
significantly. Over
yeah,
the
we got
of
better
time.
Over time. But Todd is like really good. Mm-hmm. He's an elite level player, and so the three of us just like kept grinding, and like we got there. We actually did it,
and it was amazing.
One of the most amazing video game experiences. Like, speaking of the most difficult things you did in video games, like
that
probably
was one
number
of mine.
One
that was on
for
the
us
list, for sure.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so that experience, like unlike those other kind of like false like ups and downs, this actually it has the ups and downs. But once you get there, it's like, holy shit, I'm so glad.
And then you
like,
get
I'm
the banner, you get the emblem, and it's like, I fucking went to Mercury.
Yeah, I don't have any regrets or anything. I just don't know if I could do that again.
Same.
Okay.
And like Todd like played on PS4, so like I have friends who are really good at the game. I'm sure I could go get carried, like either of us. Like, I know we both know people who are bananas good at Destiny.
Just get Mike to carry us.
Yeah, or like, and Mike has all these friends. Like, that we know people who are really good. So it's not really even about getting there. Like, I guess I would want, it was cool that you and I did it together. Because with the two of us at our kind of mediocre skill level and one person who's really elite, that was like a fun challenge. And you and I are friends. So we were doing it together. If I just went alone, it would feel a lot more like I was like just finding two people who were total killers and like just getting with them and be like, hey guys, what's up? I'll tell jokes. You get us to Mercury. And then
it's
like,
not as satisfying.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the same. So probably, I don't think it'll get me back. And there's just so many other things to do. I don't have time, but I'm glad it's coming back. I kind of want to watch all my favorite streamers, you know, watch like Triple Wreck and those guys doing their thing
watch
again.
Some data.
That was always so fun when people would just do like solo runs, like streamers on weekends. That was always fun.
All right, let's take another break and then get into some off topic chatter. Okay, Kirk, Maddie, before we even talk about the things we've been watching recently, I actually realized that a couple of weeks ago, I think one of the first things you said on the podcast before I came back was like, we can't wait for Jason to get back so we can talk about Uncut Gems. And then
we
came back and we didn't actually talk about Uncut Gems.
Nope. That ship has sailed.
Did it even happen? Did any of us even watch it? It was too long ago.
Just to give you guys
a quick frame of that film hasn't been burned into my memory for all eternity since watching it. That definitely didn't happen.
I was texting with Kirk after I watched it. I thought I would like it more than I actually did. I liked it fine. I just like didn't love it, I guess.
I mean,
that's
midway through
the
movie, I received a text from Jason that said, essentially, why can't my life be like this?
Yeah, but that was joking. No, that is not something I would ever want.
Like, boy, I really wish I was this guy.
But I want to say, what was really distracting for me is that the parlays he made, A, made no sense, B, were probably illegal parlays. I just want to say, in terms of the gambling in this movie.
What is a parlay? Like,
yeah,
what does
we don't
that
know what
mean?
That means.
You're already a level above my gambling.
Yes. So a parlay in gambling parlance is when you select a few different outcomes and tie them all together, and therefore they have to all win in order for you to win the bet.
But the odds
are way higher.
Because at the end of the movie, he has, I guess this is a spoiler, but he makes this absurd bet where a series of things have to happen. I won't say any more than that.
Well, those are all the bets he made were parlays, and they were all those absurd bets. And so what you typically do, say you're watching the Super Bowl and you're like, you know what? I think that the Chiefs are going to win this game, and I think it's going to go over the over-under total, which is a common thing to do. I've done that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you parlay those two outcomes, and instead of just getting like the -110 odds, which is typical, that's basically 1-to-1 except with a vig attached, so like you pay $110 to win $100.
There's so many
I understand
happening.
This
it's
part.
Fine, go ahead.
Yeah, wait, this is the straightforward part. So
this is like someone explaining an MMO to someone who's never played it. This is like, so you got your DPS, but then you've also got your full team DPS, and like
no, this is easy. A vig is what the casino takes, or
person explaining the MMO always says. Oh, it's not that complicated. You'll see.
Listen, it's not even that much jargon. These are words everyone everyone knows. Everyone's heard all these terms before.
You've never heard VIG before?
That's no, like I have. I have. I'm just giving you shit. Go ahead. Just explain.
I do know how like the ratios work. I understand that part of it.
So you pay, if I want to bet $100, I really pay $110 because 10 of that is going to go to the bookie. But then, and then if I win, I'll win whatever I paid back and then also $100. So you're basically risking a little bit more than you would actually win. That's essentially it. With a parlay, it might be like, because I'm combining these two outcomes, and if just one of them loses, I lose the whole bet, even if the other one wins. So they both have to be winners for me to win. You'll get way better odds. So it might be for two outcomes, it might be like 3-1 odds. For three outcomes, it might be like 7-1 odds. And the more you parlay, the more you attach to your parlay, the better the odds you'll get. So you bet $100 and you'll win $700 in return. So that's the sort of, that's what he was doing. Yeah, yeah. So what's weird about it, there are a couple things that are weird. One is that typically bookies will not let you parlay things that are like too attached, that are too like reliant on one another, because it would be too easy for that to win. Right.
Like, so both, like, it wouldn't he's going to score a lot of points and he's going to score the most points in the game or something.
It's like, well, those are both kind of on the same track. That wouldn't be a typical parlay that you could win. And then also, I've never ever heard of anyone doing a parlay that involves a game's tip-off, because a game's tip-off is just the most, it's the most random thing. Also, it's like, it could, it's complete chance, because it's just like based on who jumps at the perfect time to get their hand in the air and get the ball. It's like, there's, I mean, I guess it's the same as like betting on a coin toss or something, but
however,
to parlay that,
it makes for really good movie watching, because you're like from the very beginning excited.
Like, does it though? Because then, because like, you know that he's gonna win that, because if he lost it, there would be no tension in the rest of the
game.
Yeah,
I don't know. So it was
you,
so fun. It's,
I didn't think it was that interesting. I think they could have just picked better.
Well, but
better
the tension
parlay
in that scene isn't coming from whether or not he's going to win the bet. It's coming from the homicidal dude that's sitting there on the other side of the glass staring at him.
No, but he did that. Yes, 100%. But he did that in a previous bet also. Like, he kept making these bets.
Yeah,
based
he did
on the
make
tip-off.
A different tip-off bet.
And yeah, I'm pretty sure the bets he made would just not be legal anywhere. And I don't think Mohegan Sun would have accepted those. But so that was distracting. But also, I mean, I just didn't love it. I don't know. Something like it didn't do much for me. It didn't feel like it was trying to say anything super interesting, and it was definitely entertaining, and like definitely saw what you guys were saying about like you're gonna be anxious the whole time watching this. I saw a great Twitter thread from someone who was like, this movie feels the way it does because it's structured like a basketball game, and the Passover Seder scene in the middle is like the halftime
show. Yeah, I saw that. That's great, it was a fantastic
Twitter thread. Go check it out because it's like really smart, just like this back and forth drama of like the entire movie, and super smart analysis. But I don't know, I thought it was fine. I'm glad I watched it, but didn't love it. I think my favorite movie of the year from what I've seen so far is Knives Out, but I loved Parasite also. So very happy that won the Oscar to bring it all back. Anyway, so let's talk about the other things we have been doing. Kirk, why don't you start us off?
Sure. So as I have still been listening to my favorite movie podcast, Blank Check, which has got me watching old movies. Man, there's so many good old movies. I've watched quite a few, just that I'll usually watch the episode and kind of figure out what I think of it and then listen to their, you know, them discuss it and then try to find other things about it. They did a series on Paul Verhoeven, the director of RoboCop and Basic Instinct and Total Recall and Starship Troopers, a lot of those kind of really like violent, sex-obsessed, weird, tawdry movies from the 80s and 90s. And I watched RoboCop, which I hadn't seen in a long time. This is the original RoboCop. I believe it's from 1987. And that movie is awesome. Have you, either of you seen RoboCop, like, as an adult?
It is great.
It's so
good.
I've never seen it,
but I remember it being good.
You should watch it, Jason.
I'll watch it again.
It's so good. Yeah. And like, it's really good. And just way more sophisticated than I remembered it being. I guess seen it as a kid and thought it was weird. It's like really, really violent, but it's just not really like an action movie in the way that I always thought of RoboCop as being, this like big action star that kids loved. He's like really cool. When you watch the movie, it's way more of this like really weird, like absurd satirical kind of critique of capitalism. It feels pretty relevant now, like a lot of stuff from the 80s does, just because we're living in this era of like hyper-capitalism. Like, there's all this just like ridiculous like boardroom, like just outsized boardroom maneuvering among these horrible dudes who are trying to all, you know, design the ultimate robot and whatever. Anyway, it's a really good movie. It's like really well made, and it's made me notice more and more just how much I like it when you're watching a movie and you can see real people doing real things, just doing stunts and like doing action scenes. There's a scene where RoboCop walks into a warehouse and there's like bad guys everywhere. It's like a drug warehouse. And then he shoots all the guys and he's kind of just standing there because like RoboCop doesn't do a lot. He's just this big lunk in metal and he's just shooting guys. And like all the stunts are like, it's like a guy on a railing and he gets shot and like, you know, the blood squibs blow up in his chest and then he like falls off the railing. And it's very like, it's just a classic movie shit. But watching it and just thinking about how now, if you saw that in a movie, like half of it would be CG or the backdrop wouldn't be real. And it'd look like really outsized and detailed, but it just wouldn't look real. And I'm like, I just feel like I'm watching guys playing around almost. Like it just, it doesn't look convincing, but it looks really cool. And I've been noticing that more and more in movies. I watched a little bit of Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I know I didn't write that down. Have you, either of you seen that movie recently? That movie is like mega problematic in some ways.
No, but I've seen Robin Hood, Men in Tights a lot.
Man, so I was obsessed.
Which is what it's parodying,
exactly.
Right?
And yeah. Like to
no,
a degree.
No, 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 opposite. No, the opposite. Men in Tights is parodying Prince
of
Thieves.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what Maddie means. I don't think anyone is suggesting that Robin Hood,
no,
Prince of Thieves is a parody of Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Men in Tights, right. The serious film.
The grammar of what you said.
Sure, sure. Okay. So I watched a little bit of that. Sorry, I know I'm cheating, but I haven't finished it. Watch the first part. The movie is definitely like, it's like racist in that way of just being like, oh, like these scary people from the Middle East back, you know, who he like went to fight. But it's also very anti-Crusades and like Robin Hood is super woke and like Morgan Freeman's character is like the best dude there. And like he keeps being like, this is a stupid thing for us. So it's like, it's of its time. But there's so, the action scenes of that movie are all like these really elaborate stunts and really cool shots. There's like all these stuntmen doing all this cool stuff, like lots of like really creative camera stuff. He's like shooting the arrows and the camera's following the arrow. There's like a fight scene where Maid Marian comes out with her sword and she's fighting him and he's like holding up these deer antlers and he's like trying to fight her off and she keeps cutting off like antlers and they show it like from his perspective and then from her perspective. There's all this like cool stuff of people doing things in front of a camera and watching it. I was like, this is such a fun movie. They had so much fun making this. And then also, what's his name? The bad guy. I'm forgetting his name right now. Alan Rickman. Alan Rickman is so good in that movie that like I just want to watch everything Alan Rickman is in. This has been my unexpected tangent on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which I'll probably finish watching and is a pretty fun
Kirk,
movie.
One thing I can promise you is that your tangents are never unexpected. Everybody always expects you to go
well,
on tangents.
Well, I meant unexpected to me. I was not expecting to suddenly lapse into a 1991 Kevin Costner
Jason
movie.
And I both predicted this ahead of the show. We talked about it and we were like, Kirk is just going to go on and on about Robin Hood for some reason.
Yeah, it's going to be Robin Hood this time for sure. Anyways, that's enough for me.
Maddie, what about you?
Oh boy. Okay, I won't talk for very long about this. I watched the Witcher TV show. Yes. We've talked about it a bit on this show.
Yeah.
I didn't play any of the games. I'm not a Witcher person. Mm-hmm. Wanted to see what would happen if I watched this TV show and if I would understand anything. I'd say it didn't. Really enjoyed the show, though. I didn't know what was going on most of the time, but I don't think you have to.
No.
And as many people have said, this is a show where there's three different timelines. The Witcher is an ageless beauty, and so he exists in all timelines, and Henry Cavill looks the way that he looks in all of them, and you just have to figure it out as you go along as to which timeline you're watching. I was fine with that. I didn't think that was complicated. Mostly, I was impressed that they made an entire show about The Witcher without ever really explaining any of the proper nouns to me. I was like, honestly, I respect it. Like, after a certain point, I was like, I guess I'm never going to know what a Witcher is. It's not going to tell me. And that's actually fine, I guess. And I'm not going to fully know what the names of any of these things are or really how magic works fully. They kind of tell you. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of show don't tell on this show. And I respect it. I feel like it was a fun choice for them to make to just be like, we're not going to explain
like,
anything.
You'll figure it out. Like
you'll figure it out, or you won't, and you'll have a lot of fun while you're going along. Right. And so I guess I recommend it. I don't know. Nice. It was a weird show.
It's a good show. Speaking of people doing things, that one fight scene, man, in that first.
Oh yeah, that one fight
scene.
Like
very
good.
That's some real people doing real shit. That's fun to watch.
Good costumes. Really corny dialogue. Costumes. Great stuff. Anyway, Jason, what are you watching?
Yeah, I'll go pretty quickly. I'm watching two shows that I am enjoying quite a bit. First of all, McMillions. Have you guys watched this? It's the show.
No,
it's
I want
on HBO. It's the show about the... So a couple of years ago, there was a Daily Beast article that went super viral about this guy who scammed the McDonald's Monopoly for years. McDonald's Monopoly is the game where they have like these little Monopoly pieces and all their Happy Meals and stuff. And and you have to match them. And if you match like sets, then you get prizes. And so, yeah, so this guy scammed them for millions of dollars, and all the grand prizes like wound up going to him or people.
It was technically unwinnable
so HBO,
by anybody else, right? It was like all those years we thought we could have won, unwinnable. We couldn't because of this
Nobody
guy.
Nobody could have won. Yep. Yep. Maybe, yep.
That's
and
outrageous.
So
that
it turns out the story goes super. The story goes super deep, and there's a lot of different characters, colorful characters in it. And so HBO is doing this 6-part series. I think they're up to episode 4 now, about this McMillions. It tells the story about this scammer, and they got this. This is like the stuff of documentary dreams, because they got a couple of different characters who are like the best characters you can imagine for a documentary. Especially there's this one guy, as soon as you start watching it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's this FBI agent who is just the most colorful personality, the most outrageous,
ridiculous
personality.
He starts talking, the reporter is just like, oh my God.
It's the type of thing where as a journalist, you kind of look at it and you're like, if I was in front of the camera or I had the voice recorder in front of this guy, I would just be like mouth agape at how amazing the material is.
Oh man.
Like one of those colorful character types. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's great. And it's a fascinating story too.
Oh, I'll
it's
watch not, it for sure then.
Yes, it's a really good story. I'm not sure exactly, like them deciding to drag it out for this many episodes. I'm not 100% sure I'm with that, but it's entertaining the whole way. Like there's never a dull moment or anything. So yes, you will both really enjoy this.
Nice.
And then the other thing I'm watching is, I don't know how I resist, like I have to resist the urge to just scream about this show every single day, is Better Call Saul, which is like one of my favorite shows ever at this point. It's surpassed Breaking Bad in my mind, and Breaking Bad obviously is a legendary TV show, but Better Call Saul, the spinoff that's just about Bob Odenkirk's character, Jimmy McGill, aka Saul Goodman, is just so perfect in every single way. I mean, just the writing and the texture and the subtext and the themes and the acting, oh my God, everything about it is just so amazing. Especially, just a shout out to this woman named Ree Seahorn, who plays a character named Kim Wexler, who is Saul's love interest. And she is like the pulsing heartbeat of the show. And the fact that she's never won an Emmy or even been nominated for an Emmy for this role is just like a travesty. But she is just like really what keeps this thing moving. And man, I love this show so much. I won't get into too specific stuff about the reason I bring it up is because the new season just started.
Really?
Season 5 just started on Sunday, and it was a 2-episode event and just like came out with a bang, just like killing it, continuing to kill it. Everybody should watch it. So even if you haven't watched Breaking Bad, I think it's still very enjoyable. You won't appreciate it, all the references and stuff as much, but it's still a fantastic TV show and proof that spin-offs can sometimes surpass their original spin-ease. Okay, cool. So I think that's it, because you guys don't, Kirk, you're not caught up to Better Call Saul.
No,
you
no,
watched it, right?
I watched season 1 and it was very good, and I'm sure I'll watch it at some point, because I take you at your word that it's very good.
I'll watch it if you watch The Wire, Jason.
Yeah, that's a good deal. I should make that same
I will watch The Wire.
We should do TV-based bets on top of video game bets.
So let me tell you why I haven't watched The Wire yet. I actually have a good reason.
I didn't mean to do this. God. The show is going to end. But
I have
a
very
what?
Good reason.
Answer the question.
I have a very good reason. Mm-hmm. Okay, so for years and years, my wife and I always said, we'll do it together. But she sometimes gets into these kicks. In fact, often gets into these kicks where she doesn't want to watch anything dark. She just wants to watch like light stuff. So we watch a lot of like Curb Your Enthusiasm and just like other random shows. For that reason, she stopped watching BoJack, for example. She doesn't even watch Better Call Saul with me. She just like wants to watch lighter stuff. Mm-hmm. I think a part of it is just like Trump and anxiety and just like the world being shitty.
Sure.
Like, you just want to escape.
Super understandable.
So I'm in a place where like I can't, my TV time is limited to when the baby goes to sleep at night. That's when I watch stuff with her. So I can't really start The Wire on my own until I'm like by myself for a week and she's like at her parents' house with the baby or something like that. So if I am ever in that position where I just have a place to myself for a week, I will sit there and I will binge all of The Wire. I promise you both that.
I'm excited for you,
but
for you to do
I
that.
I think you would really love it, Jason.
Yeah, because you'll
like
it.
You specifically would like it.
I know I will like it. I've been anticipating this for a long time, but it has to be like the right time. So I can't just watch it on some random night. Is
you
the
can't,
point.
And I don't know when that will ever happen, because even watching it, I'm like, you have to pay so much attention to this show.
Yeah,
Jason will never be able to do it. Because my girlfriend and I, as we're watching it, we're like quizzing each other about who every
character
is.
You're watching it now?
Well, yeah, right this second. We're watching it in the other
room. I mean, like for the first time?
No, is second this
a first time?
Her first time.
Yeah.
Her first time.
Got it. Okay, got it.
So,
got it,
and we're both keeping track of like, there's 1,000 plot points that I truly do not remember anymore at all. So like, we're like, you know, it's a good team effort, honestly, because it's like Game of Thrones and that there's a billion characters, but my opinion, it's a better show than Game of Thrones. So.
Oh, definitely.
But it's also, it's a show about gangsters, Jason. And like, I can't believe you've never seen it. Like, yeah. That's crazy to me.
And journalists.
I am 100%.
Eventually,
I mean, I know I'm going to love it. So, like, yeah. There's no, like I said, I have a legitimate excuse. So, I will watch it at some point. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know when you will, but someday. Anyway,
I look
someday.
Forward to that day.
Kirk,
yes.
Maddie, or just Kirk, it's time for a music pick of the week.
It is. So, this is a band that a friend of mine recently told me about that I never heard that people knew. This is like a, what are they? Prog soul? I don't know what you'd call them. They're called Hiatus Coyote. They're from Australia. They're ridiculous. They're totally ridiculous musicians. And it's one of those bands where, I don't know, I just sat around with my buddy and we put on this record and like I was just like falling out of my chair and like losing my mind the entire time, especially during this track. So if you're into like, they're really chill. Their singer's got a great voice. That's like really cool stuff. But some of it is also like extremely musically advanced in ways that I don't think makes it like hard to listen to. But if you're into that kind of stuff, like prog music or stuff that's sort of advanced, it's also really good. So I recommend checking them out. This is a track called By Fire from their 2015 album Choose Your Weapon, and it's pretty dope. Here's a clip. Say Jackie partly to his funeral. Oh, oh, oh yeah. Now lost it, young and there's the clip. That's Hiatus Coyote. They're a hell of a band. They have a lot of musical ability.
Cool.
Yeah, so that is it for this week's episode. Kirk, yes. Maddie, we'll see you guys next week.
Yep, see you both next week.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is the official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Maddie Myers, Kirk Hamilton, and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. You can find us on most popular podcast services, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen and email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.